War. War never changes.
You're listening to a nerdy production.
Warning, this is a nerdy production. Welcome into the GM Workshop. My name is Jacob, and my mission in this podcast is to dig up tacit knowledge about role-playing games so we can be better GMs and create great stories, great moments around the table as a GM. And I will try to bring you episodes each Wednesday, plus reviews, action play podcasts, and maybe some bonus episodes coming up your way. Reach out to us on the GM Workshop at Facebook, Twitter, and Discord, and subscribe to the podcast in any podcast app you are using. And now, on to today's episode.
Roll for initiative.
Welcome inside the GM Workshop. Today I'm with April from Texas, and she's with Modiphius, a community manager and a Fallout specialist. GM has a Twitch and a YouTube channel for Fallout, and want to, of course, dive into Fallout with us today. So, April, first of all, where you come from, like role-playing wise, and what are you doing in this time moment with this wonderful job you have landed at Modiphius?
Well, yeah, I've been playing TTRPGs for quite some time. I started, like most people, with Dungeons & Dragons, but quickly found all of these other wonderful TTRPGs. One of them being Fallout. I was absolutely, I've always been a fan of Fallout, the video games. And when I found out they had a Fallout Wasteland Warfare game by Modiphius, that's kind of how I found Modiphius, was I found their Fallout Wasteland Warfare game, loved the miniatures, loved everything about it. And yeah, that's kind of just how I found out about it. And then, of course, they came out with the Fallout RPG, and I fell in love.
yeah, the models, the miniatures are so great. They are just spot on, perfect designs, for sure. It's just ripped out of the computer game, for sure. So, yeah. But yeah, as you said, you started with the D&D and tried a lot of other RPGs through your GM career, because you are a GM in the Fallout universe at this moment. What kind of system and setting was it that you felt your first GM love, where you felt, okay, my players are pretty entertained and want more from April's GM behind the screen? What was this game?
Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. My home group had played. We started playing right when fifth edition came out, and I loved playing so much that I wanted to run a game. And I started running a game. My friends loved it. I was invited to a streaming community to be in a streamed game. Played in a lot of games and decided that I wanted to do something a little bit different, because it felt like everyone was playing D&D and just playing in the high fantasy setting, which I love. I absolutely adore and I love it, but I wanted to do something a little different. So I took to the internet, doing some research, and this was before Fallout 2D20 came out. I came across a D&D adaptation for Fallout by Spildale Studios, and I got a group together, and that's what we started streaming with, using this D&D adaptation. And we played with it for, a few months, but then I got wind of the 2D20 system coming out and took a look at it. And already being a fan of Modiphius, I was like, oh yes, we need to switch over to this. So mid-season, we switched, maybe it wasn't mid-season, it was after the first chapter of our campaign. We switched over, and we've been playing it that way ever since.
Yeah, and that conversation, that conversion was that painful for some players, or did it was a smooth transition?
Oh man, when we were playing the D&D adaptation, one of my goals was to translate everything over into D&D Beyond. Mm-hmm. And oh my goodness, that took me many hours because the mechanics for Dungeons and Dragons and everything that goes into that, it's a lot. So when the 2D20 game came out, and we switched over to that, it's so mechanics light. It's so much easier to digest and to understand the Fallout 2D20 version. It was just so much easier for myself and my players, and it felt more like Fallout than the Fallout D&D adaptation to me. Anyway, the 2D20 system really captures the essence of Fallout, the video game.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the D20, the D&D adaptation, you said, I wouldn't never touch it in my life. So that was pretty daunting for you, for sure. Because, as you said, the 2D20, the Modiphius version of the game, are perfect spot on how the pulp and the realism are conveying into each other, like two freight trains ramming to each other. So it's just perfect for me as well. But we can touch on the discrete system and the setting, of course, in a moment. If you would sit down with a new group of players this Friday and play, let's say, Fallout, ta-da! What would you expect for your players, from your players, and what should your players expect for you?
It's funny that you should say that. I've taught this game to many people. I do. I work with the Wounded Warrior Project, teaching Wounded Warriors how to play Dungeons and Dragons and TTRPGs, one of them being Fallout. Mm-hmm. So I have taught this game to new players.
Nice.
And it's really simple when I have players who have never played TTRPGs before. The more challenging ones, I feel like, are the ones that have played Dungeons and Dragons or Pathfinder or have, you know, background, because they have to get it in their mind. A nat 20 is bad. You know, the dice mechanics are a lot different, and the game is more simplified for role playing and being free to do kind of what you want narratively, and just let the dice decide, did you accomplish what you wanted to do narratively? I would go through character creation. That's probably the most difficult part of this game, is character creation. But after you get past that, everything is so simple. It's just making sure that you know what stats go where and what dice to roll and what weapons you have and what little trinkets and stuff like that you have. That's the hardest part, just getting started. After that, it's a breeze.
Yeah. But what would you, what do you want from your players when you set up a group? Like, for instance, some experienced players, what do you want from those to bring to the game, as story-wise, or some expectation for a campaign, for instance? What things do you want from your players, and what should your players, again, expect from you to a campaign setting, for example, in the Fallout setting, for example?
Oh, well, this is a collaborative storytelling experience, and yes, you can actually read in the guide how it gives you prompts and questions that you can ask your players.
Yes.
So that, with other role-playing games, it is the dungeon master comes up with most of the story, right? I mean, players have their player character background and stuff like that. But with this, it actually tells you in the book. It gives you questions to prompts, if you will, to ask your players. When you come across an NPC or there's a part of this town, you ask them, what do you see? You let them help build the story.
Yes.
And you're basically just more of a guide, and let them have more control of the collaborative storytelling experience, which I think is really unique and fun.
Yeah, and it's so important for a big sandbox, because Fallout is a great sandbox setting and system for sure, and letting it all over to the GM is a huge work, and if the players are into the story and into the sandbox with you, it's much more fun to build castles and destroying them afterwards in the sandbox. And when looking at the game, because this is, as you said, a new way to, or a different way to approach a campaign startup setting, and most players are not, if you take as you said, D&D players out of their dungeon and put them into a Fallout sandbox, they wouldn't cannot manage this without some guidance. What kind of guidance would you give, example, a new GM that wants to do this with their group?
I think one of the most difficult things switching over would be getting used to zones instead of movement speed.
Yeah.
Wrapping your brain around that, especially if you're playing, I would say if you're playing with Theater of the Mind, it feels more organic that you can play in zones. But when you start using minis, or you start using, you know, VTT and stuff like that, sometimes it will take a moment to realize, oh, I can move anywhere in this zone and it costs me nothing. Yeah. If I want to move outside the zone, that's my minor action. Mm-hmm. So just realizing that you have movement and you can disengage, for the most part, you can disengage, and it costs you nothing. You can move close to an enemy and away from an enemy, and it costs you nothing. You don't get an attack of opportunity and stuff like that. So wrapping your brain around that takes a moment. The dice mechanics, of course, you know, knowing that a nat 20 is a critical fail, yeah. A nat 1, or getting your target number, that's, you know, a critical success. You know, stuff like that. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun trying, like, wrapping your brain around it. And once you get it, it does open the door for endless possibilities. Another thing, usually, you know, with some of these other game mechanic heavy games like D&D, like saying you're going to do an action, you have to do that specific action that's in the book, that's on your character sheet, exactly how it says, and then you roll the dice. With this game, you kind of have some narrative freedom and some role play freedom, saying, you know, I want to do a backflip and land my super sledge on this mutant hound or something like that. You know, cool. Roll your 2d20s and roll your hit location to see if you land it there. Or are you going to take the aim minor action to say, yes, I am going to hit it on the head? So there's a lot more freedom there.
Yeah, I've talked to Ben about the 2d20 games, and the most fun he has when trying to talk to D&D players, that the 1 is good and 20 is bad. He has a lot of fun doing that. So yeah, that's a bit sadistic of him. So but he enjoys that part of the difference between those two games for sure. And putting in these of course, the different system from D&D and from other systems, for instance, the zone system are adapted. A lot of the other players, the free league games, also have these zones systems where it's more flexible. It's not squares as in other games like D&D or Pathfinder or so on. So a lot of other games are also adapting this more flexible, more open-minded movement system, and I like it a lot, because I'm playing mostly Theater of the Mind, so it's easier for me to help my players understand where they are in the zone and where the monster are or whatever. I like the zone system, but also the part where you said how the players are into telling the story. And for instance, in the beginning of the small scenario in the book, the Fallout book, there's a lot of questions where the players has to answer where they are, of course, where they came from, what kind of settlement they are in, what kind of enemies there are around them. So there's a lot of laying power over to the players, but new players or players that are more from games where the more DM-driven games like D&D. This could be a difficulty, and I'm curious to understand how we can help our GMs do this. If you have any guidelines for this to help players or help GMs understand what the players are doing, can you formulate anything for this, April?
Sure. If you're new to if you're new to 2D20, especially Fallout 2D20, I would say that you should absolutely start with one of the modules, like you said, with a bang and a whimper in the back of the core rulebook. That's an excellent module to run. I've read it multiple times, and it really does help you acclimate and get used to the environment and the storytelling and the mechanics of this game. So I would absolutely recommend that, as well as the Quick Start Adventure, which is free. So you can get the Quick Start Adventure on our site, the PDF. Yeah, so we have that with all of our games right now, actually. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you could get the Quick Start Adventure for Star Trek, Dune, you know, all of our games, Fallout. And it's a nice little adventure. And then of course, now we have the our starter set adventure, which I will be running soon on a stream, and I am looking forward to that. But these module adventures are the best way to get started and to acclimate, so that you can start to learn how to collaborate this storytelling experience in a new way with your players.
Yeah, that's and these questions in the beginning. My players are very seasoned players. I have four very seasoned players. That's right. And we ran through these questions, and they were blown away how much thinking power they have to, what kind of thinking cap they have to strap on their head to figure out these things, and how much they were a part of the narrative, the part of the sandbox. It's a module, and it's a pretty tight story, but the players had a lot of saying in the tightness and why where it's not tight. So I like that a lot, and the questions are so good, and actually something I will try to use in another RPG. So that's a great element for the game. But we can touch on that in a moment when we touch on more Fallout. So war never changes. No, I can't do it the same way as Ron Perlman, but today we're talking Fallout, of course, and I'm in love with that setting. I just played my first session, and April is a seasoned Fallout player and played it since it was released by Modiphius, and a community manager for Modiphius, so she has a lot of insights in how to run this game and how to be the great overseer in this game. Check out our Facebook page, GM Workshop the Podcast, Discord and Twitter if you want to interact with us or be on the podcast. Reach out to us so you can give us your GM advice and perspectives on your favorite game. Yeah, so let's jump into this wonderful setting. I am a huge Fallout fanboy. I just played the New Vegas all day to gear up to this talk, April. So I love this setting. I've played this in the first iteration of Fallout, the Fallout 1 and 2 games, and know maybe a lot of the setting. So we can be very very geeky around it. So I hope you want to join me in a geeky talk about this setting if you like. So let's jump into this setting. So first, and we can guess on this in hours, but what is the draw for this setting for you, April? And then I can jump into.
I am a huge fan. I know a lot of people are fans of, you know, Eldritch horror or high fantasy, which I love high fantasy. I have always been drawn to post-apocalyptic settings and TV shows, movies, games. It's just one of my absolute favorite settings and stories to play in post-apocalyptic worlds. So that immediately, it was just a big draw for me. And I love that it's a divergence from our own timeline, and to see what could have been, you know, it's kind of like the multiverse, what's happening in the Fallout multiverse over here. In its little divergence. So that's just been something that I've always loved.
Yeah, because the one of the draws for me, especially as you said, and still not so serious, because that's some of the draws, because we can play a lot of the other games out there, so that has a lot of this. The Power by the Apocalypse game, for instance, are created like a Mad Max kind of setting and world where the players also have a lot of say in the setting. But it's very gritty. It's very dark, and the Fallout setting does something else for me, not only for the computer game, but also now as an RPG, because we have a lot of fun in games. It's more easygoing, and that's some of the strength for me in this setting, for sure.
Yeah, I adore the dark humor of it.
Yes, and it's so important for playing this game to understand this, and of course playing the computer games or read a lot of fan fiction or whatever before jumping into the setting. But if the GM are not into this setting and know the ups and downs in this setting could be very difficult to run for a new GM, I imagined, because it's a lot of the aesthetics and the 50 aesthetics. I love that feel, and the Pip-Boy drawings and all the aesthetics around this setting are so in embracing the madness in the setting as all, but there's a lot of grittiness in the setting as well, as you said, the dark humor part of the game as also. Have you ever played a lot of the computer games, of course, and the Fallout computer games. Have you played in all of them, yeah, or just the newer versions of them, or how are your thoughts about this?
I have not played 1 or 2. I watched playthroughs of 1 and 2, but I have played all the other ones, and I have a very an unpopular opinion. I've enjoyed Fallout 76 since it's from the beginning. I've always enjoyed Fallout 76, which I know is not a popular opinion. Just because I love Fallout so much, I understand, you know, there were going to be hiccups and stuff like that, but it's still Fallout to me. I love that they've finally added. It was weird though when it first started, when there were no people. Yeah. I was like, but why? I know that we are the people, that all the other players are the people, but you also need people. Yeah. That was the one thing that was so strange to me.
The NPCs are missing. Yeah, I've never tried the online version of the Fallout 76 because of the... I'm not a big fan of online RPGs as a general. And some of the draws for me in the computer game are the great story, and the great stories are not in the, because all the players are getting the great story in the, we are not special any special in that version on the online version of the game, but I know a lot of players like the online because it's the sandbox feeling of Fallout, because that's also very important, and we can touch on that in a moment, because that's some of the very very key strokes for me when trying to play this game, and I saw it very very clearly when I tried it. This is a campaign game, and the legacy of the computer games give this a lot of balance into RPG's version of the game and how to run the RPG games from the scope of the computer games, so that's pretty important for me to acknowledge the legacy of the computer games. As I said, I've not tried the online game because I'm not an online game fan, but I've played all the other games a lot. so like we can take it from that point. The pulp and the quirkiness in this game, mixed with the very hardcore Mad Max kind of world. How do we do this in as a GM and around the table, April?
Well, I mean, we've got so many. There are so many different ways that you can play this game. You can play it RP heavy. You can play it where you're really wanting to get into the nitty-gritty of playing a very survivalistic style. There's mechanics for that. Mm-hmm. Or you can throw out that part. There are also ways that you can craft items if you really want to get into the crafting side of it.
Yeah.
You know, it also has encumbrance. But if you are not a fan of being over encumbered, which is a big part of Fallout, as we all know,
yes,
you are always having to go scrap stuff and drop stuff off. yeah, you can play with that mechanic or you can ignore it. It is very sandboxy. You can play it how you want. Mm-hmm. So, but there are rules and mechanics for all of it, just depending on how you want to play it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of system-wise, there's a lot of crunch if you want the crunch and want the simulation from the computer games. And I like that you have the option, but you can also ignore it in most cases. I'm not a big system guy at all. So for me, that was a lot of, when I read the book, there was there's a lot of rules in this. But when I sat down and played the game with my players, that was, okay, we will ignore this and ignore this, and we will try to focus on the RP, and we have two combat encounters and so on. So I like that part a lot. As you said, the how to play the game up to the player table or the game table, and the pulp barometer, if you can set that, is also within the players around the table that set that bar for what kind of silliness we want in our game, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the system has a lot of tools to help players, actually, because of the action point system. We can do a lot of silly stuff with the action point system, and do some heroic stuff and some funny stuff as well, if the players are into that narrative. Or we can use the action points, as in the game, to just shoot the death claws in the desert. So we can use it a lot, and the system balance that's helps a lot in that regard. We only play 4 hours, so I'm not an expert at any cases, but I've tried the system and tried the setting, of course, and it's have a great balance, April. It's a great sell for sure. When putting in, as you said, the system, the crunch in the system, you can craft stuff and encumbrance and all these things. The hardship of the wasteland, as I said, I've written up in our outline today. It's some players are not into that, and some players want the more role playing having, and how would you balance this around a group, if you want one that wants the crunch and one that wants the more RP and one wants some combat and so on? How do you want to balance that at a table?
It's very important with any TTRPG, of course, to have a session zero, yeah, have clear communication with your players, checking on your players, especially if you're running a long form campaign, just checking in with everybody, seeing how they're enjoying their experience, asking questions if they want to. I mean, just similar for me, when I started playing this, we did use the where they needed to eat and drink for, you know, X amount of times a day. They had to roll their radiation if it was a radiated snack and stuff like that. So we started out that way, but then going into several more sessions, we found out that was kind of slowing things down. It was fun at first, yeah, but then it became something that wasn't enjoyable to my players, so we dropped that. Mm-hmm. We still had where they could eat food and beverage and get perks from that, but having to roll every single time they consumed something and asking them every single time, did you eat something today? Did you drink something today? How much? And keeping track of that wasn't something that my players ended up enjoying long term. So I mean, it's, you can ebb and flow, you know, go with what your players like, what you like, and you can change it up because it's your game, it's your story and your experience, so you can add and take away things as you play. Just be honest and open and have that line of communication with your players.
Yeah, that's a good point. Communication also always important. But as you said, the crunchiness and of the system, we can ignore a lot of parts of it. There's some core things we cannot ignore, but then, as you said, the food and how much radiation and how much did you drink and blah blah blah. It's, if the players are into it, fine. If they, you can have a helper with the players that makes a chart and have a control of it, so it can be a part of the game, because it's also resource game. Fallout is also resource game, so if food and water is not a part of the resource game, some of the aspects in the sandbox story will dissipate, and maybe just putting in some notifications for the players, okay, you have to drink and you have to roll for some radiation but make it more lean or more easygoing. That's also an option to find some balance between those. So I think we played 2 days in game. They ate some snack bars and so on. So and had some radiation damage and. Yeah, that was it for us. But as you said, in a longer campaign, it could be very, very tedious to have this control element in the game. So yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, we ended up making it to where every time that they made camp or they stopped, they always made a point that one of the players was pretty much the cook, yeah. And the mom kind of figure of the game. So she would make food for everyone, make sure she would sometimes mix things, like she would take Instamash and you know stuff like that, yeah. And cram and just mix it together. How does it taste? so they would make sure that they were narratively saying that they were consuming things that they needed, yeah. But we weren't as concerned with the roles eventually.
Because I like the part where you said you're using these namings, the Instamash and so on, because that's a part of the flavor in and then the aesthetics in the Fallout. So if we are not using the cockroach meat or the ant meat or the Instamash around the table, some of the aesthetics from Fallout will dissipate as well. So I think it's important to have some kind of help from the more hardship of the Wastelands to make up for the Fallout aesthetics. So it's pretty important I think it's important to have some kind of coherence between the iconic food Instamash, yeah. For instance, and not too much and not too like in the game Forbidden Lands from Free League. There's a lot of, it's a hard, it's like a resource system, very very dedicated, and you cannot really undo it in any way. It's integrated into the game. So I like the way you the Modiphius have created this game, that you can use it if you want to. But if you don't, you can use parts of it, and that's pretty important for me. So it's not interlocked between the system and the players. So yeah, some of my I'm thinking about to run a campaign with my players in Fallout, and one of the boundaries I found out was that. How can I put in these quirky moments, like the kings in New Vegas, for instance, if you can remember that part where it's this gang, like Elvis impersonations. Some these quirky moments in the game where it's fun, we can smile a bit, but it's not over the top stupid. Where can we seek inspiration for this? And have you any tools for them when you are running campaigns? Where do you sniff up your quirky moments for your players?
Oh, well, there's a ton of resources out there. There, of course, is the Fallout Bible, where you can go and you can just research all the lore. There are many people out there, forums and places that you can find if you're really into a certain faction, like the Children of Atom or something like that. If that's something that you just really want to incorporate into your game or a certain setting, or if you're wanting to, like I've done, I went and my campaign was in Texas, so I just researched, you know, any bits of information that would be around that I could add. So yeah, there's plenty of resources out there like that. We also, of course, have our official Modiphius Discord, where people can chat about the game, chat about Fallout in general, and stuff like that, just to get information or share information and experiences and ideas with other people who are fans of this game and are running this game. Or looking for a game, even. So yeah, plenty of places out there to look for information.
Yeah, for sure.
To come up with ideas.
Yeah, I have a great idea for a city or a gang. I can't remember. I can't. Let's put my finger on what kind of it. But in my campaign here, it's got to be called Mega City, and not Mega City. And it's guys with the red hats and orange cream. They lash onto their faces so they look like Trump. So I'm looking forward
to
that.
That's hilarious.
So I'm looking forward to see my players' reaction on that. I'm just want to shoot them all. I don't know. Mm-hmm. yeah, you're in Texas, so you are having it the hard way down there. So it's not a joke over there. So when playing in the Fallout universe, we are constructing a group. We had a super mutant, a vault dweller, a brotherhood, and a wastelander. So we missed out on Ghoul, but we have four other aspects in the gaming group. So it was not a very good group because it was in all directions and it was not very coherent and it wasn't a very tight group in any way because they have a lot of different aspects in their life. How to create these groups, April, and how to is this a does would the players bring the character to the table and say I'm this in this group, or should the players sit down and say, okay, we will construct this group together and have some ideas around the table in how they know each other or something like that? How do you think this is the best way in Fallout?
Honestly, either way is fine. I mean, of course, you want everyone at the table to get along and to enjoy playing with each other, so that is important. But I would never force somebody to play a character or a role that they didn't enjoy, because that's not fun either. Oh. But yeah, I mean, with this game, I've seen online, I've seen people on streams play as basically all Mr. Handies, you know, just to have fun with it, or a super mutant group, or have a mix of stuff. My group had a big mix, and we had a homebrew synth that we had in my game. So I've seen intelligent death claws that people have created. So, and I've seen people play as Protectrons. It's endless, or Robo Brain. It's really endless on what you can do with this and what you can play and who you can play. And as long as everybody is collectively genuinely wanting to have a fun time, storytelling and getting along and not trying to make anyone else at the table miserable, you should be fine. I, for instance, in my campaign, I had a super mutant, a hybrid. There was a reason she was a hybrid, a super mutant hybrid, who, hated our synth character. She hated robots. And once she found out our synth character was a robot, it really strained their relationship.
Oh, really?
Because they became friends, and then all of a sudden she found out that she had lied this entire time that she was a synth. And but it was so good narratively. Once they found out, they had to figure out a way to make this okay, because they were friends in the end, and they were on this experience together. And it was so much fun. So sometimes when you have conflicting characters in the group, narratively, it's going to be interesting, enjoyable, and along the lines, it's just going to make for a better and more entertaining story.
Yeah, that's great, great point. And the super mutant group would be fun to play. that's a hard hitting bunch for sure. We had we had one of my players playing super mutant, and she had a lot of fun and was very, very a lot better fighting than all the others in the group, for sure. She was a hard hitter with her hammer. But constructing a group, make the players like all the other RPGs, but in the Fallout universe, or the Fallout games, stretching back from the legacy of the computer games, that's a key character, and that's a companion. So that's figure out who are the key character in the group, and who are the companions in which chapter of the story. You might set something up like that to see, okay, this chapter I'm the primary character, and we have four companions all rotating in each chapter or something like that. Setting up some narrative guidelines for your players and with your players, that's it's a good idea, April, for sure. For example, you knew that would become a conflict between those two players, because one of the robot and one of the anti-robot mutants. So you knew that from the beginning. So these two train will collide eventually,
and it was glorious.
Yeah, and figure out when this will happen. Did the players know that they were playing a robot? Was this a secret, or in any way?
Well, they knew. They knew that she was a synth character.
Okay. Yeah.
But in game, they didn't know her backstory. They didn't know the whys. They didn't, especially the super mutant, they didn't know the whys, why she hated robots and why she felt so strongly about that. So they didn't know any of this, the backstory wise. They got to play it out in RP. But they knew she was a synth meta, but they did not in game. None of the characters knew until it started coming out. And then one by one, a player would find out. Another player would find out. And the very last person to know just happened to be that super mutant who hated robots. And there was a big blow up, and it was just beautiful. And it was one of my favorite parts of the campaign.
Yeah, and that's just a small thing. That's not a great showdown with an antagonist or anything like that. That's just players interacting with each other. That's gorgeous. That's the one we want at our table at any time as a GM, for sure. So what should a bunch of misfits in this setting do? How can we guide some DMs when picking up this game? How can we help them in any way, April?
Really, it's kind of like pretty much what you want to do. I assume that if you are wanting to play this game, that you are a fan of the video games, or you've at least heard of them, and you're a fan of post-apocalyptic settings. So one thing that you can do, like I've said before, is of course run the modules that we have available to you.
Yep.
The one at the with a bang and a whimper in the back of the core book,
mm-hmm.
or our Start Adventure, or the new Starter Set Adventure, which is fantastic. They're all wonderful. But other than that, I mean, you can play as close to the story and canon of Fallout as you want. You can play in the areas that have been introduced already in the Fallout video games, if that's what you want. If you want to take this, there's a group that I am friends with that they play in Asia. They play in a completely unexplored, mostly in the video games area of the world, that's not a lot, it's not really known about. So you can take this and do whatever you want with it, as long as you are having fun, your players are having fun, and it makes sense to you. You can play as close to canon or as far away from canon as you want.
Yeah, because yes, the canon part of the game are aware. It may be hard to find, picking out other iconic settings like Star Wars or Star Trek or whatever. It's hard to find this balance between too much canon and enough canon. I think, because if you're not running Fallout as a Fallout game, pick up another game, or just don't say it's Fallout. Just say it's post-apocalyptic game. It's weird to figure out how to. It's hard to figure out how much canon we want to put into our games. I'm a big fan of the Alien RPG, and sitting down with my players and saying, "Oh, we're playing aliens," and if they're not are getting up against any aliens, it's not aliens. so figure out that balance between canon. It's pretty key for me in this setting, for instance, for sure. I have, as I said, I have an idea for a campaign, and it's taking in the terms of the Curse of Strahd module, if you know that.
Yes, very well.
And then taking that play pattern in that, because that's a balance between the players. There's an antagonist which has to use the players and are not allowed to kill them off, but the players has to defeat the antagonist in some time. But if they screw around too much, the antagonist will kill them because they are not useful anymore. And in later terms, or earlier terms, if they move towards start too early, they will die because they are not ready for it and they don't have the equipment to defeat him. So creating a Fallout campaign in that scope, that's my purpose in the next few weeks when I'm looking into running a Fallout campaign with my players. How do you like that idea, April?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And, you know, one of the fun things and also terrifying things about Fallout 2D20 is there are no death saves or similar. Yeah. When you die, you die. Yeah. Unless, you know, somebody can get to you and stabilize you and fix you, your character dies. And it feels, you know, very much like the games. Of course, you get to respawn in the games. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's really a high stakes. It's very high stakes to have that realization that your character could die. Yeah.
And the idea, the basic idea, the reason why the players are kept or are confined into this this area, this sandbox, so they cannot flee from the bad guy, is they have a rare disease where the antagonist also have to use their DNA because he also have this disease, which are not spoiled for the players in the beginning, of course. But that's the reason why he have to keep them alive. But he has the one part of the puzzle, and they have another part of the puzzle. But in some part of the campaign, he will have both puzzles, and he have no use for the players anymore. So figuring out that balance, it's gonna be fun for sure. So yeah, that's my that's the purpose in that campaign. I hope that's can be fun to run for my players. It's gonna be fun, I think. As we touch on April, the system, is for me. I'm running normally free league games, a lot of free league games, and Powered by the Apocalypse games. So this game was actually pretty crunchy, but I know this is not the peak of any crunchiness at all. But it was pretty difficult for me to figure out what's ups and downs in it. But we managed, and one of my players are a seasoned Infinity player, so he knew the systems and like ground rules. So that was a pretty big help for me, for sure. And as we touch on, I think the system is perfect for Fallout. It has the heroic parts of the game, but also have the mortality for the players if they screw around and fuck up too much. What's your thoughts on the system? To gush some more about the Modifius 2D20 system.
Oh yeah, certainly. So like you said, if you're not used to the 2D20 system, it can be intimidating to just get the core book and open it up and feel like you need to learn all the mechanics right away before you can ever start the game. You know, I myself felt that way, but I am also a quick learner and a study, and I took insane amount of notes. So I felt okay with it. But I know there are a lot of people that are not. So what we do is we do have a game master guide that is basically, it takes everything in the core book and all the rules and mechanics and everything, and it simplifies it, it breaks it down, it makes it easier for the game master or the overseer, if you will. I like to go by overseer, yes. In this game, to take the game master guide, read through it, get the basics down, and start playing the game. And of course, the same thing with the starter set. The starter set has that. It has all of the tools that you need. It has pre-generated characters that you can open it up, sit down at a table with your friends, pass out character sheets, and just get started, because it breaks it down and simplifies it for you to where you can just get started right away without knowing all of the extras that we have in the core book that make, you know, it even more Fallout-esque.
Fallout-esque. that's a new word.
That's a
new word. So
yes.
Yeah, it's a great point for to test out the system. I tried running looking through the GM guide, and yeah, it was cool to have that help for sure. And as I said, I have one of my players that was seasoned Infinity players, so that was very easy for me to link into to his expectations, his experience from Infinity game, which are the same core mechanics. But it's very intuitive when you hit the ground running with the system. I want to say, because when you get it, you get it. It's not back and forth with it like the other system, like in D&D or D100 systems and so on. That's a lot of push and pull with those systems. This system are very lean. It's that direction and so on, and figure out the action points was the biggest hurdle for me and for the players, because that was new. The players couldn't do anything without action points, and that was pretty fun actually. They could do minor actions but not major actions, so they couldn't shoot without using action points. That was pretty fun, and the players had hard time to wrapping their head around that. It was pretty fun, and the action point system are some of the most fun things about this system. How do you use the action point system, April?
Well, that's something that it's different for every table, I would say, because it does tell you that the action pool is replenished per scene. So a scene is basically what you make of it. Is a scene an entire chapter? Scene. A day. That's what I do. They take a rest. I replenish their action point pool, and action points and luck points are a lot of fun to use in the story. It gets people out of sticky situations, but you have to remember that the Overseer also has action points. Mm-hmm. That they can use. So if the players start, and the Overseer's pool is infinite, so we don't have a cap on our pool. So if the players start getting a little greedy using their action points too much to get out of sticky situations, and it starts making everything, you know, kind of blasé and boring, then as the Overseer, you can come in and say, oh, no. Now I will use my action points to make your lives a living hell, just to get back into the fun of it.
Yeah.
I love the use of action points and luck points for the players and for the Overseer. Yeah.
And can you touch on because that was one of my difficulty when GMing this, and because using action point for a game master, it's pretty unique way to, because it's. Sometimes it becomes a lot of the GM versus the player kind of thing, but I don't want to use that acknowledgement, because it's not the way we want to play for most cases. So how do you use these Overseer action points? Have you some good ideas and some great scenes when you have used these, so we can steal some of your ideas, April?
Yeah, sure. So, if I have been, if they've been fighting some rad scorpions and my attacks are just not hitting, I mean, of course, I'm just going to stack up the deck, and I'm going to make sure that I use action points to where I can hit them, because, you know, maybe I gave them too much armor, or maybe I let them have a little bit too much of this. So you can use action points to change stuff that way. You can also, change difficulty ratings for scenes and stuff like that. So so really make them burn through their action points if they're abusing that. Just stuff like that. Just using your action points when they're using theirs. And if they're, just coming up with creative ways to get them to burn through theirs, or question if they should use there is a lot of fun.
Yeah, putting that the heat on the players and that one. I did that a lot. I was using my action points for one of my players headshotted my end boss very, very so I used three of my action points actually to make him take the hit in the heads with one hit point left and shots back at the player, and so that's some to have some scenic way, and then he died afterwards. So you had so having a lot.
Yeah, because you can use it to use an extra major action, an extra minor action. Yeah. So maybe your super mutants that they're fighting that would have normally just, you know, attacked once, maybe they're going to attack twice this round, and I'm going to use some action points to do that. Yeah, yeah. Just to deal some extra damage and put some heat under them.
For sure. And as you said, the extra attacks from your monster or for your Deathclaw or anything like that. But also, I tried to figure out how to use the action point in non-combat ways. I tried to figure out how to use it if I want to run a scenario where some ghouls were civilized ghouls would be affected by something, and they will change into feral ghouls, and then I could use my action points to change them up to from feral ghouls to more dangerous ghouls, like a glowing one or something like that. So the players can see, okay, when Jacob has some action points over there, these ghouls can change from feral ghouls to glowing ones ghouls, and then that's pretty that's pretty dangerous for us. So we have to balance that the use of action points, for instance. So I have to figure out how to use these overseer action points in a different way, not only in combat. So that's my goal in my campaign. So I will let you know if I get any ideas. As you said, the character creation part of the game are pretty difficult to wrap your head around, especially for new players. But because there's a lot of choices, there's a lot of equipment, there's a lot of skills and of course the specials, the key attributes. How can you help players or help GMs to help players to figure out how to make this transition easier, especially for another game or something like that?
Well, you know, we just released Fallout 2D20 on Fantasy Grounds and Roll20, so that makes character creation a breeze, because it's basically just go in there, create a character, it has all the steps down for you. So love that. So if that's something that you're maybe if you're someone that comes from a Dungeons and Dragons background and you're used to using D&D Beyond or something like that, using the character creation on Roll20 or Fantasy Grounds, it makes it so much easier for you if that's what you're used to. I've also written a kind of a cheat sheet that I always give to my players that simplifies. You go, this is step one, step two, step three, and so on, that has page numbers on it, which it does that in the book. It does. And it'll tell you, okay, you've done this, now turn to this page. It does have that in the book, but sometimes it's nice to have a step-by-step list that's simplified. So I do that for my players, and they've all really enjoyed it, and it's really helped with character creations.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point, because I created characters with my players when I played, and it took actually like an hour or two, maybe, to create four players, and they were all seasoned role players. So that was a bit a steep learning curve for me in this system, and I was pretty surprised actually, because the other part of the systems are so easy going, and the setting and so on. So that was. It bothered me actually a lot when I picked up the game, for sure. And we'll touch on this part, as you said, the cheat sheets and of course the online versions now on the character creation are such a blast, and I wanted to use that when I'm creating that campaign I've talked about before. What's up next for this game, April?
Well, Samantha has hinted on some things that we have coming out in the future in one of the newsletters we released a couple weeks back. Like, we are getting physical perk cards.
Nice.
Yes, for people that like to have physical cards. I'm one of those people. Whenever I play, Dungeons and Dragons, I like to have my spell cards. with me and, you know, little card protector sleeves. So I am very much looking forward to having physical perk cards, because those are going to be beautiful to display, beautiful to hand out to your characters so that they can remember what perks they have, and to have those organized and when they level up those perks and stuff like that. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah. And what about equipments? Did you have you that in the pipeline as well? Because that would be very nice as well.
We've discussed that. The one thing, the one problem with trying to do equipment cards is the modifications, obviously, because you can modify all the equipment basically.
Yes.
So that would just be a little tricky, trying to make enough, and then multiple equipment have the same modifications, so you would be running out of cards very quickly.
So we've
talked about that, but not quite sure. We've also we've heard people discuss that they really want an overseer screen, a GM screen, like we do with some of the other games. So we're considering that, but not. I mean, don't quote me on that, because I mean it's not a for sure thing. We've heard people. We listen to recommendations and stuff all the time. So if you tell us something, of course we're going to. And there's enough noise around it, of course we're going to look at it. Also, looking at expanding, the creatures that you come across, expanding on the player characters, what you can play as. So we're looking at stuff like that. I can't give you specifics yet, of course, because I don't think we've released and said anything for certain that we're doing, but we're looking at all that and more, you know, more adventures. We'd love to start adding more quick adventures, publishing more adventures for people to pick up that like the modules and don't have to stress about coming up with stuff on their own, on settings to play in and stuff like that. So we're looking at publishing some more, you know, little adventures for people to grab and go and with at their tables.
For sure. Yeah, and smaller campaigns would also be a great, because I think this game is perfect for campaign game. And it's such a swell to use the setting and the canon, as we said, all the equipments, the modifications, and all the stuff. We don't have the time for that in a one shot. We cannot touch on all this stuff in a setting, and taking some of your, if you are US based, it's great for you to, you can just take your local area as you did on the stream, but also in touching on maybe on Europe, what's happened in Europe in the Fallout world and so on. There's a lot of options for sure, April. Cool. Yeah, but I don't have any more for you today, April. It was a blast talking to you about the Fallout setting and all the nitty gritty things about that system and setting and so on. So it was great. Thanks for this, April.
Yeah, thanks for having me on and loving Fallout, because Fallout's an awesome setting and awesome game.
Thanks to April to talk to us about the Fallout. Next time we want to talk about the West Marches and how to run a campaign in the West Marches format. So I'm looking forward to this a lot, because I'm a huge campaign player myself. So listen up. Follow us on Facebook, GM Workshop, the podcast. If you want to interact with us and talk to us, give us a message. Warning, this is a nerdy production.